And thank you all for that, for this. So today I'll talk about deformed gauge theories and their string rules. Brief outline. First of all, I'll try to convince you that gauge theories with deformed products of fields in the Lagrangian constitute an interesting generalization of the gauge string correspondence. And this is mainly because they can be studied in a unified framework by making use of the so-called TST transformation that we will talk about in detail. So after general introduction, I will go then to study this TST transformation in detail. TST stands for t-duality shifted duality, as we will see. And I will show you general formulae, both for the closed ring backgrounds of the supergravity fields and for open string boundary conditions and d-branes, which is usually very relevant to provide a bridge between gauge theory and gravity quantities. And I will briefly flash the Lunin-Maldacena solution dual to the beta deformation of n equals 4 supergravity, which is the prototypical example of a solution obtained via this operation. Then, in order to illustrate a bit the properties of these deformed solutions, I will present two examples. I could actually show the Lunin-Maldacena solution, but that would be more boring than I would like to be. So I will actually present two different examples, the first of which will be the beta deformation of the three-dimensional n equals 6 Chern-Simons matter theory, which is dual to the theorem multiple and two branes found by Aroni, Bergman, Jeffries, and Maldacena. So we'll study the moduli space of this theory by making use of its gravity dual obtained through this transformation. And the second example will be instead of about a more, let's say, realistic gauge theory, which is n equals 1 super QCD. We'll consider the string duals to super QCD with a big number of flavors, so not in a quenched approximation. And we'll see how the TST transformation of the gravity dual to this theory can be used to study the theory, in particular to disentangle some unwanted Kaluza-Klein modes. So this is the outline. So let's go. Okay, we all know this, the CFT correspondence in the prototypical example. Is the exact duality between type 2 distincts on a DS5 plus S5 and n equals 4 super n equals 3. There are many generalizations that one might be interested in. I don't know, generalization towards less supersymmetric string theories or other kind of other dimensions, other conformal field theories or not, non-conformal field theories going towards 2QCD or whatever. The thing this talk is concentrated on is actually to study generalizations that arise when one considers deformed products of fields in the Lagrangian. So we have fields of our gauge theory, phi 1, phi 2, and we want to modify the product with sort of star product. It's very generic over here. So what is the probably best known example of this kind? Well, it's the non-commutative deformation, which arises when the star product is the Moyal product, which I write here. And this gives rise of if we consider X1 and X2, Xi, Xj to be compact, for example, to the Young-Mills theory on a non-commutative torus. This is a rather exotic theory, and it's non-covariant, non-causal, non-local, and so on, but it has been used in a variety of contexts, including phenomenology, for example. And it's still it's a good example of some gauge theory arising from string theory, and it arises when you have a background B field. Okay, however, we might be interested in, let's say, less exotic generalization. And one step down in exoticness is the dipole deformation. So the dipole deformation, it's still a non-local theory, but it's not living in a non-commutative space. So you take you assign charges to the fields of your theory, you want charges, and then you make up these dipole vectors and modify the product by star product, which is given by this non-local product. Okay, this again is non-local but commutative. Why should we be interested in this? Well, it's an interesting generalization by itself. It's supposed to give, for example, the same planar diagrams as the uniform theory. But recently, new reasons arise why it could be interesting to consider these deformations. For example, if the dipole direction is taken to be along the light cone of the theory, it has been shown by Maldacena, Martelli, Kachashikawa, also Adams and other, and Herzog and others. I mentioned Maldacena and Martelli here because they are the ones who use the TST transformation that I will talk about. Anyway, if you do this transformation along the light cone, you automatically obtain to a gravity dual to a superconformal to the conformal theory, you get conformal relativistic theory, you get a theory which automatically has Schrodinger symmetry. And so you can study non-relativistic systems. Another reason, which actually, I will not talk about this, even if at the moment also with Leonard and Sujay I'm working about related things. But in this talk, I will be interested in another application of dipole theories. Because dipole, if you compactify a dipole theory along the direction of a dipole deformation, you can actually get a dimensionally reduced ordinary theory with no deformation at all. Just the result will be that some interesting properties of ordinary theory, and we will see this in the second example when I'm talking. I will be talking about super QCD. Okay, this might still look too exotic, so let's go to the least exotic example, where you just add phases to the interactions. This is the so-called beta deformation. So in this case, you don't have like directions in theory anymore that you twist for. You just have U1 charges. So you assign charges to the field, and you modify the product by a phase depending on the charges to the field. It's just an ordinary theory with deformed interaction that can be interesting to study. And for example, if you start from n equals 4 super young Mills, this is the marginal deformation, which is in the class of the least hostile deformations. Right, this might be just schematic because, you know, all these theories, I call them star products, but they look all very different from each other. But in fact, the interesting thing is that all of these apparently unrelated theories can be seen in a unified framework because they arise as deformations by means of higher dimension but not necessarily relevant operators in the field. This, in particular, has an interesting consequence on the gravity dual, as found in the seminal paper by Lunin and Maldacena, because you can obtain all of these deformations by doing a simple operation in the gravity dual of the undeformed theory, the theory without the star product. This corresponds, you identify a torus in your geometry, and you do that transformation on the parameter tau, the complex structure parameter of the torus, where gamma is a real parameter. These can also be seen, if you are in a string theory setting, as you usually are when you do string duals, as clear operation. You take one of the directions of this torus, let's say phi 1, you do a t-duality along it, then you twist, you shift the theory by modifying phi 2 by quantity proportional to phi 1 with this parameter gamma. And finally, you retidualize along phi 1, and you get your deformed theory. Notice that this is a solution generating technique because these are symmetries, but this is not. So the resulting solution is not, I mean, it's a simple coordinate transformation. But still, the resulting solution is not cannot be obtained by, let's say, a chain of legal dualities transformation starting from the default solution. So this means that we can study this theory deformation systematically, almost mechanically. This is a very easy operation to do in your gravity dual. So what kind of deformation we obtain depends on where this torus is. So for example, let's consider a gauge theory in the DP brain, of which for simplicity, I just show two longitudinal and two transverse directions, of course, depending on the dimension of the brain and gauge theory. The situation can be more complicated. And the first example we consider is where the torus, the two angles of the torus, are along the word volume of the brain, all of them. So a generic star product, which consists in modifying the F times G fields product by some conserved charges, 1 and 2, possessed by the fields F and G, in this case, can be expanded by knowing that since the torus is longitudinal to the brain, both of the charges will be momentum. In which case, that product will reduce to the usual Moyal product, and what we get is a non-commutative theory. Second case, the torus is partly along the brain and partly longitudinal to the brain. In which case, one of the charges will be the momenta, and another will be some U1 charge, some part of the R-symmetry, some part of the transverse symmetry to the brain. And what we obtain is the dipole theory. Finally, as you might now very well guess, if the torus is entirely transverse to the brain, we have two U1 charges, and we get the beta deformation. So to summarize, torus is longitudinal to the brain, non-commutative theory. Half and half, dipole, all transverse, beta deformation. So this transformation can give us all of the previous deformations that we saw in the introduction in a clear, systematic way. Well, this is just a schematic thing to say. So for example, if you want to start from, okay, no, this is mostly a DP brain in the gravity dual of the undeformed theory, right? So for example, if you consider, let me say it back. If you are studying a gauge gravity duality, you're usually taking a D brain and going to study the near horizon geometry along this D brain. So you may think of the resulting solution as going, as getting the near horizon geometry, the corrected geometry of your D brain when you put it first on the deformed flat space along this total, or just you apply the transformation to the deformed solution. Does this answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay, so having talked about TST, let's go to the more technical part, which I hope the boredom will be compensated by the colorfulness of the slides. So we start from an undeformed solution. So undeformed in lowercase here, we have a GP metric, we have a Nemeth-Schwarz two form in sometimes two theory, dilaton, and the usual modified field sign. So we do our PST along phi 1, phi 2, and we get the deformed theory where the fields are uppercase. Nice thing is that being a systematic mechanical procedure, we can find general formula. So this is the formula.
Can I ask another question? So these d-duality rules should be derived using the worksheet theory. So were these d-duality rules in the Ramon-Ramon backgrounds derived using some Green-Schwarz or your spinner formalism or?
No, I think no. So I think they were not derived. So in the next slide, which we will see worksheet fields, but just what concerns the bosonic field. However, if you then go to the space-time perspective, you can see that the rules that you infer just by using the worksheet bosonic fields and the rules you derive by the usual Boucher rules for the including Raman form are perfectly consistent. So I think that I don't think there is an independent derivation. I think actually. Follow up Alutunov and there will be the third author in the next slide. Aldai have shown the worksheet transformations for Fermions too, but I'm not sure how general the result is. Anyway, I think the bottom line is that everything works with the standard. Standard Boucher rules for Ramon-Ramon fields that you would derive in that space.
So you're saying that after doing all this, you still should check that the solution that you found should satisfy the equation of motion?
Actually, not. I'm saying that it does work and it's automatically a solution generating technique. So even if it was maybe not derived in the most rigorous way, what I claim is that it always works. We show that it even works in the final part of the talk. It even works where you have like a solution which is not even only supergravity, but supergravity plus world volume action source, and it automatically gets that solution. So, yeah, I might be wrong, but that's what I think happens. All right, back to the general transformation. The E is given by this expression. Notice that this expression means we always generate a D, no matter what we start with, a Nemeth-Schwarz two. And we'll also change the dilaton. So if the dilaton was constant before, it will probably not be constant now, because this M, which in the simple case involves the determinant of the metric on the two torus, so it will change the value of the dilaton, which might become varied. So let's make some examples, let's show some examples, because that's just very general. So what actually happens? What actually happens is this ubiquitous M factors will go to multiply the direction, the metric components along the directions of the transformation. And if we start with a solution which has no initial B field, which is very often the case, we'll generate a B field, in particular in the direction 1, 2, also including this M factor and the gamma deformation factor. M, in this case, is just 1 plus gamma squared, the determinant of the metric in the torus. Let's go to the Ramon-Ramon part now. And we can beautifully encode the rules of all the Ramon-Ramon fields in this form. So F is the modified field length. So the old F wedge, the new F wedge B, wedge E to the B, will be equal to the old F wedge to the B, plus the deformation parameter times the same thing, but only the phi 1, phi 2 components. So we'll now show this is a schematic expression that has to be understood degree by degree in the forms. And okay, this is just a shorthand notation, which I'm not really sure why you use it. It's just imperial product, right? So omega p component square bracket y is just the y component of omega p, so it's the imperial product. I think I copied this notation from some old paper by Kacher and then stuck with it. Anyway, so examples. So the new F1 will be given by the old F1 plus gamma, the phi1, phi2 component of F3 plus F1 merge B, and so on. So by, with this, you can easily get all your type 2A or type 2B quantities. So you can also, by a gate choice, write this in the terms of Ramanujan potential instead of field strength. And you see clearly that this is naturally understood as a transformation of the Vesterminno coupling in the Debye-Wolf volume action, which is exactly the sum of C e to the B. This shows you that there is a dp dp plus 2 brain coupling somehow, which, as we will see in the following, will be can be understood as a Myers dielectric effect, where your Debye can actually expand along the transformation. But in order to do this, we need to study open string boundary conditions. This is important in, well, because if we want to study transformation in general, it might be nice to do that. But also, because it's often Debye probes in your gravity backends that provide the connection, the bridge between the gauge theory and the gravity quantity. So it's definitely interesting to see how Debye transform and what kind of Debye probes we can have in the deformed background, depending on what Debye probes we have in the undeformed background. Right, so I think we'll just now go to the open strings. So let's go, let's consider only bosonic, for simplicity, worksheet fields, which I denote with subscript zero, and I call them all phis, not to distinguish between what is an angle and what is not. Phi one and phi two are definitely angles if you want to do these dualities. And do TST to the coordinates without the zeros. So the transformations are really simple. You can see they can be easily written in all fields in terms of the new fields. And these B and G are the B and G in the deformed background. So this side is all new. And of course, so you see that phi 1 and phi 2 have this simple symmetric form of the transformation, from which you can also see that doing a TST along phi 2, phi 1 is the same as doing it with phi 1, phi 2, but with changing by changing gamma to minus gamma. And of course, the transverse coordinates are untouched. So what happens to the Debye? We have to study the boundary conditions. Since we know how worksheet fields transform, we can consider the boundary conditions. So if you consider phi mu, for any specific mu, to be a longitudinal direction to the Debye, this direction will have to in a, if it were not in flat space, but in any space-time, we'll have to satisfy this generalized Neumann boundary conditions, where G is the metric, B is the B field, and F is a word volume gauge field that we might want to turn on in the brain. And these are lowercase because we are in the undeformed background. So what happens? We apply the transformations there, and we get this thing, which is, well, something which is not immediately recognizable as either Neumann or Dirichlet. But for example, if we consider the initial F, the initial word volume gauge field, to be zero, then we see that the resulting solution is again Neumann with F equals zero. So you start with Neumann with F equals zero, you land to Neumann, F equals zero. Nothing has changed, the brain is still extended there, and there was no gauge field, there is no gauge field now. Things are more interesting if the direction phi mu is actually transverse to the brain. So d tau phi mu is zero. So most of the time, as you can see from there, from like this side, it will stay the same. You can combine them in order to see that they are still Dirichlet. Except in one case, if the brain is transverse to both the direction where we do the transformation, phi 1 and phi 2, the resulting boundary conditions will look like this. So you can see these are exactly Neumann boundary conditions with a gauge field on the brain, which is proportional to the inverse of the deformation parameter. So we get Neumann boundary conditions with F1, 2, F1, and F1. So we start with the brain which is transverse to both the directions of the transformation. We land on a brain which actually extends to it, but with a magnetic field. So this is also the interpretation in terms of Myers sort of effect. So let's summarize. We have Debye, we have a space-time, we have the torus, we do the transformation. What happens to the Debye probes? If the Debye was extended along the torus, even only one direction of the torus, it will stay the same. If the Debye was not extended, what it was point-like, then it will tend to expand along the torus and generate this magnetic field proportional to the inverse of the deformation parameter. So the inverse transverse to the torus expands into a Debye wrapping the torus with a magnetic flux. However, there's a caveat in this. because the torus is compact, so the gauge field through it must be quantized. So this is actually true only if gamma is appropriately quantized. Most of the time, gamma has to be rational, like the simplest case, 1 over n for some n. So what happens? But gamma is a generic parameter. Supergravity doesn't actually select any specific value. So gamma can be generic. What happens if gamma is generic? Well, if gamma is generic, the brain can survive the transformation, let's say, only if it were sitting at very special points where the torus was shrinking. So in which case, there's nowhere to expand. It will stay what it is. But if it's situated somewhere else, it will not survive it. It will not be. If you had a supersymmetric problem before, you will not have it afterwards. This picture is a bit misleading, sorry. It's not really cycles that shrink. You have to think of this torus fiber over the geometry, and the brain has to sit at the point where the torus is actually shrinking. OK? Well, the TST transformation breaks some part of the supersymmetry, but you might still have some supersymmetric folds afterward, which is actually usually what happens. For example, if you start from equal source 20 mils, your standard, you know, Maldacena probe, or you read the gauge coupling and so on, will still be supersymmetric, except now your theory is equal source supersymmetric, not equal source supersymmetric. Right. Okay, so before going to the examples, let's still flash briefly the prototypical example by Lunin and Maldacena. So we start from n equals 1 supersymmetric mils, which can be seen as in n equals 1 notation, we're having that superpotential for the three complex scalars, phi 1, phi 2, and phi 3. And this is our good vanilla alias 5 versus 5, written in a way where when I write this as R6, basically, but with this constraint. And the radius of ideas and the sphere is proportional to the number of colors. So we do our TST deformation, which is an exact imaginary deformation according to Lie's cluster, and we land on a beta deformity. Okay, this is just technical. Actually, the torus phi 1, phi 2, where we have to do the transformation is given by the small phi 1, phi 2, which are not exactly this phi 1, phi 2, but okay, it's just a linear change of property. So this is the transformation. You can see the properties I was talking about. We have this dilaton is no longer constant, it's m, where m is 1 plus gamma squared, the determinant of the metric on the torus of the transformation. We have generated a b, and since we had c4 along the phi 1 and phi 2, we have also generated a two-form Raman-Raman potential, so a three-form field strength in the resulting solution. This is the solution by Lunin-Maldacena. Why is it interesting? Well, this is interesting. So t-duality is, I'm going to go back. T-duality is taking place along the small phi 1 and the small phi 2, which are a combination of this. Basically, it's like, okay, let's put it this way. You can also do it on big phi 1, big phi 2, big phi 2, big phi 3, and big phi 3, big phi 1, with three different parameters. And this will give a completely non-supersymmetric deformation. If you put all these parameters equal, you get this. This is an alternative way to say.
In the S5, are these But they do?
Yeah, definitely. It's not a singularity, though, right? It's just what the vibration is. They do. In the simplest, I mean, every time a mu is zero, one of these angles will shrink. So you take the combinations and find the way it goes. And that's what it goes, right?
Sure. I'm confused about the expression for Raman-Raman 4 form.
Yes.
So, omega 4, what is omega 4?
Oh, omega 4 is, this. Is a four form whose differential is the volume form of the S5. So this is just, so if it's DC4, you will get omega DS5, which is what you expect. The difference is this n factor here, that there was one deform. So the sphere part, basically this remains a DS5.
So before deformation, m is 1.
M is 1.
M is 1.
So before the deformation, n is not there for me.
And so this before, if you take, okay. So if you take the derivative, then DC4 is just the usual F5, which has.
Except now it will not be. Not anymore in the sphere part, because there is an N part. Right, so why is this interesting? Well, we have a gravity dual to n equals 1. It's interesting because it's still n equals 1 supersymmetric. It is superconformal. It's one of very few n equals 1 superconformal theories where you have an exact Lagrangian description. So having this solution is very nice because you can actually consider both sides explicitly and match things. So, as I was telling, I could show some properties of the transformation here, but I won't because you know, it's like I want to show also some new stuff. And but for example, let me see that. Let me say that what we saw about dBrainz is also very useful here, because you can study extended objects in this gravity duos. For example, Ridas and Nakpi and also other people studied giant gravitons and also Wilson loops. And you can use the properties of the transformation to see how, depending on the values of gamma, your moduli space and the same mesonic spectrum of the mesonic DPS operator changes in the beta deformity. Right. Sorry.
People studied Wilson.
Wilson loops, yeah, me. Okay. And Marco Pirrac as well. No, actually, only me. So you work with us at NACRI. Actually, the gauge theory interpretation is not extremely clear, but we studied basically the three brain and the five brain Wilson loop operators, which are dual to Wilson loops in different representations, like work with John or with Philippe, for example. And we found that also in the case of Wilson loops, there are different Wilson loops that can arise in the deform theory depending if gamma is rational or not. I'm not sure, entirely sure about the gauge theory interpretation of this. We just had the, you know, the gravity part.
Could you say something about the integrability of this better deform theory?
Well, I think works on Bernstein and others show that basically you inherit most of the integrability properties during the course of supernumeration. But I haven't really studied
this model.
Excuse me?
What are the sigma models?
So again, I haven't studied in detail, but I think you can write a sigma model and show. So it's some work by Bernstein and others. I would have to check.
If you just follow the transformation and dualize the lax connection, you will get new lax connections.
But there's an S-duality there.
There is no S-duality. S-duality is there only if you want beta to be complex.
Okay.
So if you just keep the transformation parameter to be real, I think you can do what Amit was saying. Because the small s is just, you know, shifting coordinates that you can easily implement in your simulation. So if you want to do actually beta, so here we are restricting to what, so for some weird reason, beta, when beta is real, it's called gamma. So the beta deformation, the gamma parameter. And if gamma is real, you don't have S2-alities. So safer. I'm not sure if they did it also with beta complex.
But there is a non-loop that answers also about that.
I think so, but again, let me, I should relook at the literature to give you a real. So. Right. Any more questions? Because that's a good place to ask questions, because then we go to the two specific examples. Okay. So as I was saying, I will show the properties of this TST transformation for closed and open states in two examples. The first will be a beta deformation of ADJM field, which is a 10.6. And I will say later. And the second will be a dipole-induced deformation in quartz transparency. So, starting from the work of Badger, Lambert, and Gustafsson, there have been lots of written progress on superconformal Chern-Simons matter theories that live on multiple and two bodies. Some people call it a mini revolution. So, there can be many motivations to study this sort of theories. Well, first of all, we didn't have many examples of 3D superconformal theories before. In fact, there were Schwartz and other people who were looking for them, but no, there was not many were known. Second, well, knowing what the theory of multiple M2 brains is can be probably useful to actually understand what M theory is in some way. And finally, even with the less string theoretic motivations, these are three-dimensional theories that can be interesting also for connections to condensed matter. So the like most famous of these theories is the BGM theory proposed by Aharoni, Bergman, Jeffries, and Maldacena. This lives on NM2 brains probing in C4 of a ZK orbital. It consists of two gauge factors, two UN gauge factors, Chern-Simons factors, with levels K and minus K, where K is the K of the. So the matter content is given by these fields A and B, in the fundamental and in the bifundamental representations of the two gauge factors, and the theory has n equals 6 superconformance. It can be encoded in a quiver diagram, which is basically the same as the one of the three binds on the manifold, and in fact also the superpotential in URI is the same as the Klebanov-Witten superpotential. Right. After BJM was found, there were the people were looking for generalizations, for example, to less supersymmetric transcendence matter fields. Again, many people like these many works by Hanani, Zaffaroni, and others, and these are just examples. The point is, as I was saying, also for reduced supersymmetry, there were not many examples of this CD theory. So after you found n equals 6, it was much easier to find lower, like n equals 2 supersymmetric theories and stuff like that, because you were starting from a higher by generalizing the highly supersymmetric theory. But there is a very easy example of generalizations one could look at, probably easier than all of these people, which, well, you might have guessed. Is the beta deformation. The beta deformation yields n equals 2 superconformer theory. Remember, n equals 2 means 4 supercharges in 3 dimensions. That again admits exactly a Lagrangian description, which is obtained by substituting the BJM superpotential with a modification of this software, where gamma is our real deformation parameter. Okay. So, what we'll see now, well, let's see the gravity dual of this theory. So, we start with the ABJM theory. Okay, ABJM theory, we consider it has different gravity duals depending on the range of parameters. So since all our transformations were shown in for string theory, not for M theory, because I have to do T-dualities and all that, we'll consider the type 2A dual, which is given by the old, well-known ADS4 times CP3 solution that is shown there. So this solution is valid when both parameters n, the number of colors, and the level k go to infinity, the Toft coupling, relevant Toft coupling for this case, n over k is fixed, and n is the range from k to k to the fifth. If n is much bigger than k to the fifth, then the proper description is ADS4 times S7 times ZK in 11 dimensional supergravity. But again, as I was saying, we'll concentrate on this. All right, so in order to do the transformation, let's find two U1s. There they are. U1 phi 1 times U1 phi 2, and apply our machinery. And that's the result. So, as you can see, the dilaton has now changed by complicated factors depending on the CP2 and angles. We have generated the B, and we have changed the four-form field frame. And M factors are appearing almost empty. So, notice ADS4 is untouched, which means we still have conformal theory. And what is changed is instead of CP2, we have a deformed CP2, exactly like in the case of Lunin-Maldacen. Instead, we had a DS5 times a deformed C. Right, so we could study this theory in many ways. The easiest thing one of the easiest thing one can do, which is also interesting because we have all the ingredients because we have shown how to study the D-brains, is to study the moduli space of the theory. So let's make one step back and go back to the undeformed ABJM. How would you, for example, study the moduli space of ABJM? Well, you might, if you are in type 2A, put a probe D2 brain in your ADS4 times CP3 solution, or a problem 2 brain in ADS4 times S7 times ZK. So this is your DP brain action. You specialize for P equal 2. For this kind of D2 blob, so extended along in Poincaré coordinates, x0, x1, x2 over ADS4. You put the solution in, and then you, in 3 dimensions, you can dualize the gauge field onto a scalar, so you get an additional scalar, and you see that the resulting metric on the probe brain, action of the probe brain reduces to the C4, shows you that there is a C4 over ZK moduli space. What about the beta deformed ABJM here? Well, in this case, it depends on how our parameter is. If gamma is generic, so any gamma, you might, your D2 brain probes will actually be nicely stable and supersymmetric only if they sit at special points for the torus strings. So they have to be extended here but they have to sit where this torus, phi 1, phi 2, changes. There are six possibilities. For example, the angle psi of the CP2 being 0 or pi. But there are six possibilities. However, there is an additional possibility. As I was saying, if gamma is rational, like quantized, the D2 brain will tend to expand into a D4 brain along the torus with electric and magnetic flux. Electric now because we are considering all the fluctuations, so you will also have gauge field component along the torus. So let's study these two cases. Let's start with the D2 brain problem. The embedding is that one. For example, of the six possibilities, choose psi equals 0 in the metric. This is a D2 brain probe. I will kill myself with this at some point. And this is the mass we have to put in. But however, the mass is very simple because where the torus shrinks, m is just 1. So the DBI part uses the same Lagrangian as in the deformed case for psi equals 0. And also the C3 plus C1 wedge B uses the undeformed C3. So the computation is actually very easy. We just have to, again, dualize the 3D gauge field via the usual Lagrangian multiplier that enforces the Bianchi identity on shell. And that's what we get. That's the result in action. So the result in action, we just have redefined the radius to another coordinate row. So what is this space? This is just a metric on the 3-sphere in terms of Euler angles. So it seems to be R4, except now the angle alpha, which should have periodicity 4 for 3-sphere, round 3-sphere, has periodicity 4 pi, has periodicity 4 pi over k, which means that the Abelian modular space, we consider one probe, is made up of 6 copies, because you can repeat this for every place where the torus shrinks, of R4 over zk. So from the C4 over zk, we go to 6 copies of C2 over zk, which is this is the modular space. To get the non-Abelian modular space, of course, as usual, you have to perform a symmetrized product of these factors. Right, can we match it with the gauge theory? We have our superpotentials modified by the parameter gamma, from which we can derive the F-term equation. And you see there is no way out to satisfy this F-term equation for gamma generic, which is not putting two of these A1, B1, A2, B2 fields to Z. And there are exactly 6 possibilities to put two of them to 0. And each of them spans a C2 over ZK space, which matches precisely what we have found on the graphics. Right, what happens when gamma is rational? Now we expect new branches to arise because besides the D2 brain, which are still there, because when gamma is rational is also generic, there will be D4 brains expanding along the torus. This is the embedding, so we'll have the D4 brain expanding along phi1 and phi2 of the torus with the magnetic field like that. This is our D4 brain action. Now putting in the mass is a bit more complicated. But if you can compute this, and you trade the Wilson lines on the torus, your fields A1 and A51 and A52, by periodic scalars in that way. And then you can integrate over the two torus and again dualize the 3D gauge field to get a 3D, your actions depending on your scalars. Okay, this is just to make a long story short, but it's a straightforward computation. And what you get is this. Your D4 brain action is equal to, well, dr squared plus R squared d squared S7 over ZK, which is exactly what you would get from a D2 brain in the undeformed background, except for the factor 1 over gamma in front. So does it mean that in these additional branches, the moduli space is just C4 over ZK as it was in the undeformed background? Well, it does not, because there are actually differences in periodicity. Because while the Wilson lines have the same periodicity of the original angular coordinates, this one do not. They have these factors of gamma. Gamma is 1 over n in the simple cases. M just means if you want to have multiple wrappings, let's say 1 over n. So the periodicity is 2 pi over n. So actually your moduli space in the Abelian case is a Zn cross Zn of the fold of C4 over Zk. So we have shown, and this is like a prediction from the dual side. I haven't actually matched it to the, tried to match it to the gauge theory side, but it shouldn't be too hard like in the during Malacena case by making use of solutions in terms of clock and shift methods. Right.
How
could
that prediction, so you look at the superpotential and try to
find a new solution, where special points where gamma is rational, like
lead that I assigned in Jajal and others did for the Rooney Mandasena case, but I didn't use it. Actual work. Right. I think, yeah, so what do we learn from this? Well,
first of all, this is very general. Beta deformed theories show special properties, new features for rational values of the gamma of the deformation parameters. And we saw that they can be nicely captured by TST transformed brain probes in the deformed background. Notice also this has if you flip the coin, you can see this in the other way. If some quantity is captured, for example, the gauge coupling or something is captured by some device that does not transform, it will probably be invariant under the transformation, and so you will have the same result in the deformed background as in the deformed background, as is very often the case. All right, if are there any questions on the BJM part, or we can go to the next example. Okay. The next example, we go to something more realistic, back to four dimensions, away from high supersymmetry. So let's consider any Quartzmann supersymmetric UCD with NC colors and NF flavors. This is the Lagrangian we all know. There are quarks, there is a gauge vector. And let me add, however, a quartic superpotential to this theory because, well, we will need it to find the gravity dual. Well, someone else needed it to find the gravity dual. So the gravity dual is driven by the back reaction of NC color defined brains and NF flavor defined brains, right from some manifolds or some compact Calabria. This was found for the unflavored case by Mandasen and Nunez back in 2000, and more recently by Casero, Nunez, and Paredes for the case of the flavored background. So, what you usually do when you study flavors in DSCFT is consider the quench approximation where the number of flavors is much smaller than the number of colors, in which case the flavor bands can be treated as probes. However, you might be interested in another regime where the NF and NC are of the same order, so you don't neglect all the diagrams that you would neglect what is called sometimes the Veneziano Dalgian limits. Right. So in order to do this, first Bigazzi, Casero, Cotrone, Chirizis, and Paredes, and then Casero, Nunez, and Paredes show that you have to find a way to still encode some flavor open string dynamics in your gravity dual. So your solution will no longer be a solution just of type 2B square gravity, for example, but the solution of gravity plus brain, where the brain, the S brain is a like the world volume action, the Dirac Bordinfeld action, for your flavor brands. So these solutions will all be singular, but we'll have what according to the criteria of Mandasen and Nunez, for example, is called a good singularity, where you can still look for properties of the gauge dual. There is another problem that localization of the brain is difficult because you have bunches of delta functions in the equation of motion and you don't know how to solve them. So a crucial ingredient in order to solve, to find these solutions was to smear the flavor brains along all the remaining space. And this corresponds, allows one to find the solution and corresponds to breaking the 2NF flavor symmetry down to U1 to the end. Basically, every brain will have its own K, so you have a distribution of K and the flavor symmetry, which was already broken from this QCD, SUNF times SUNF to just one factor of SUNF because of the quartic superpotential is now really broken down to U1 to N.
There are many solutions for gravity that capture the reaction of many, many brains. They're just regular solutions. You know, all these bubbling solutions are exactly the same.
Yeah, all the solid?
Like the bubbling solutions for.
Yeah, but I think the problem here is the flavor dynamics. So you need the open strings to capture the flavor dynamics.
Well, but those open strings are in the bubbling geometry. The fluctuations of the. It's kind of a different picture. So the open strings correspond to closed string excitations around the corresponding supergravity solution. There would be one.
And then you would study by like a probe, like a DBI action in the background.
No, no, they're using closed string physics. It's open closed duality, so you could use it in closed string.
So I think for this specific example of so if you want to let me see. So you think like Babria, like LLMs of the geometry,
yeah,
and so on.
So N sub F is small, right?
Sorry?
N sub F is small, much smaller than.
NF is small?
No.
No, actually, that's exactly the point. So this is done in order to make NF of the same order of NC. So you want to have an unquenched
field. Oh, okay.
Let me see. Not sure of the reason. I think in this specific, in this specific case of SuperQCD, I think the close thing that you want. So how can you? So
how can you get? Think of the case of say the geometry that describes the Wilson loop. So in the code picture you have brains in the buffer.
Right.
It's a purely geometrical description. And imagine you want to study open strings fluctuations that live from the different from the bounding picture point of view. So the first thing you have to do is you have to specify the spectrum of fluctuations of supergravity on the corresponding bounding solution. Some of them will correspond to kind of open strings that were living on the different. The other ones will correspond to the usual kind of measurements.
I think the claim in this case is that you won't find the good degrees of freedom to describe this kind of works in this n equals one superQCD settings. So
what's the argument? What's the argument for that?
I'm not sure. I think let me think. Because it might be that there is an alternative description where you don't have your brains, but this one's
no. The point is you have both. It's kind of the
yeah. You have both. So, but because you don't. Yeah.
It's not very homomorphic.
I agree, but
is there a decoupling limit or no?
So, provided the point is all these solutions are single, right? So is there you can trust them up to a certain point because of the way the method goes to the singularity. So it's what it's called the good singularities in dinosaurs.
So you say localization is difficult, but is it in principle possible?
I think it is in principle possible. I'm not sure. I think it's mostly a technical problem.
Could it be that once you localize brains,
there are some examples, for example, of theories which are completely localized. Usually, it's harder to get both an F of the order of NC and the localized brain at the same time.
From free theory point of view, so what does smearing of brains mean?
Yeah, that's what I said. Smearing the brain corresponds to breaking the level symmetry down to U1 to
the
NF.
Right, so it's basic.
In general. I don't, yeah. Can you?
And how do you achieve that?
Smearing?
Yeah, if you sort of breaking.
Yeah, so basically, it's just instead of having all the lines in the same place to give you UNF, you have smeared them along the whole space.
So
it's like you everybody has his own coupling. So this superpotential will have like NF different couplings.
Uh-huh.
We should break the UNF down to. Because you have different topics.
So you give it different culture.
So again, I don't know. I don't think any solutions of like n equals one superQCD were found, but just the clustering sector was able to encode the quark dynamics.
In some sense, you have two couplets, right? So there is.
Excuse me, you have two?
You have two couplets. One is on the collet D5 grids, and the other gauge coupling is on the flame with D5 grids, right? So now you can think that both couplings are not zero, right? So they're all gauged. But then when you take a flavor limit, you want to keep a flavor with D5 grids pretty much at zero coupling.
Right.
So on the other hand, in the collet sector, you can go to a strong coupling regime, which will end up replacing it by a dual gravitational description. But you still need, the flavor D5 sector
to be
at zero coupling. So that's why they will always be, they will always correspond as an open string. And the question is whether or not you take a back reaction of those grades or not. You know, if there is a lot of them, then you should.
Yeah, that's what. Good. Thanks.
What happens to the string coupling when NF is as bigger than C?
Excuse me, when an f is bigger than?
No, when f is as bigger than c, what happens to the string coupling? I mean, so.
I think, so you, there are still ranges of parameters where you can keep it small. You can look at the curvatures, except if you're really close to the symbol. And the dilaton, okay, the dilaton also explodes. So some of these theories have, well, not this theory, but if you put too many tables, of course you have Landau power problems that will affect the, into the curvature solution. All right, any more questions? So the gravity dual of super-QCD was found by Kazel, this kind of super-QCD with the properties I just shown was found by Kazel, Nunez, and Paredes. And this is a simple case. It's called type A solutions that are only valid when f is bigger than c, which correspond to the, well, the interpretation is that solutions where the Gugino condensate and thus the quark on the same, which is related to it by a condition normally relation, are both zero, which is consistent when f is bigger than c, but not when f is smaller than c. So there are also other kind of solutions called type n from non abelian, similar to the non singular Mandelson-Nunez solution, which are actually valid for any values of n, and they correspond to the solutions to the Gauge theorem and the condensates are on. We just, I mean, we can transform both. I did transform both, but we just use this because it's much simpler to show.
What's the profile of the dilaton?
The profile of the dilaton, okay, there are different solutions. So there are some solutions in which, like the Mandelson-Nunez, the dilaton goes diverging.
So in that and case, on the, near the boundaries?
In that case, the interpretation is that your theory actually becomes six-dimensional. This is a five-dimensional theory wrapped on S2, you go to little string theory, basically. But there are other solutions where the dilaton goes to four. So it depends on which, there are many values of asymptotic expansions.
So is there a solution that only focuses on the infrared part of the geometry?
Is
that asymptotic like AX5?
No. There are some solutions for some special some special solutions. It actually asymptotes to AX5 and C1.
Okay, so you are not considering conformals, SQCD?
No. Well, okay, no, let me give a better answer. There is a special solution for an f equals to 2nc, where we know that the theory has to be conformal, that where all the fields behave nicely.
Okay, so in that case,
but only in the specific case, an f equals to 2nc, or the theory is.
So in that case, I think it could behave as AX5?
Almost. There is a subtlety about that, which is not completely clear. It might be that the whole the full conformal group is not by this specific solution is not reproduced by the solution. So it's the notation invariant, but it doesn't reproduce the full of this. That's that's what Kazel, Nunez, and Paredes find. And I'm not sure what completely means. Right. So in the next 5 minutes, let's try to do the transformation. So notice
the fact that there are sources is. Of course, shown in the explicit in the solution by the fact that the Bianchi identity for F3 is violated by a term which is can be obtained by the terms of for the flavor of the five branches smeared on the volume of the four directions and then on the extended, which is this. So in order to, we want to study the TST transformation of this, the reason is. Well, there can be two reasons. First of all, it was shown by Gursoy and Nunez some time ago that if you do this kind of transformation, you can that transformation can help you in disentangling unwanted Kaluza-Klein dynamics from the dual gauge theory. This is a problem that plagues all of the n equals one, basically, all of the n equals one gauge gravity duals, where your string scale is usually the the global scale, mass scale, is usually the same order as the Kaluza-Klein scale. So you can actually never really have a dual. Many arguments about that. But by doing, we'll see that by doing this, you can actually identify some parts of the Kaluza-Klein dynamics and ignore. Also, from a technical point of view, we can test our formula, see what happens if we actually do a TST transformation on a solution of S gravity plus S brain, not just S gravity, and see if it's consistent with the rules we have derived. So let's go a bit faster now. This is our type A solution. We identified two U1s to be this phi and phi tildes. Notice that, of course, all these functions, H, I, H, G, Y, are functions of rho. And apply the transformation, and this is the result. So an F1 is generated, a big B is generated. Now M is much more complicated because it also depends on rho, so the radial coordinate. So thus it varies with the energy. And the Dirac is also modified. The Dirac was running before, is running now. It's not really a big difference, but it also depends on the angles, which it didn't do. Right. So the first thing we can see is what are the Dirac sources. So what we did, sorry, we had a solution of S gravity plus S prime, but we just mechanically applied the rules for the supergravity field. So was this consistent? How were we treating those sources? So in the original solution, we have a D5 brain flavor source was extended along this these five directions and then smeared along all the four remaining directions. Now what do we have? Well, if we do TST on this D5 flavor, that was transverse to the torus, except for the smearing. So we would expect a D7 brain expanded along the torus with the magnetic field. You could also say, well, but it could also sit at special points where the torus shrinks and remain a 5 brain. But that's probably not possible, because actually we are smearing them anywhere. So they cannot only be at the place where the torus shrinks if they are anywhere. So they will actually have to expand the D7 brain, which probably means the solution that I showed before as a S-gravity plus S-brain solution is only valid with gamma is quantized, where we can have these D7 brains. So we take, yes.
Brain will localize because you broke some simple symmetry. It must sit there.
Yeah.
So how can you smear it such a thing?
So, exactly. So that's exactly my point. So if you want to keep the brains to be defined, they would have to sit on that point, and I couldn't smear. However, we know that the brains can sit at any point if gamma is quantized, because they will be able to expand on the torus. So the only consistent framework I can find is where the D5s are anywhere. But you get one D-brain at one point before smearing. You do the transformation that will expand along the torus. And then in order to find the solution, you will smear the remaining direction. So you take your D7 brain action with N7 D7 brains. And this means that the type of the equations of motion of the identity, depending how you look at them, this is like the star FA, F9, and we'll be modified by the source types like this. We have obtained our solution, so we actually have what explicitly these things are in our solution, and we see if they match. They actually do, provided N7, the number of 7 lines, is gamma, 1 times N. Which also shows you that gamma cannot be, you probably cannot have square root of 2 with 7 lines, and you need gamma to be one of the n, some special relation between the n's. As I was saying, this isn't like the compensation. Okay, so in the last 0 minutes, I'll briefly show what this means for the gauge theory. So if you do it, this theory transformation is partly along the brain, this phi, and partly longitudinal to the brain. So it's a dipole deformation, what we saw in the beginning, because the torus is partly along and partly longitudinal. So our six-dimensional theory on the phi brain will be a dipole theory with a sub-product of this. However, when you reduce on the sphere, there is no sign of this. We get an ordinary four-dimensional theory, because the deformation was on the sphere, not on the four-dimensional part. The interesting thing is that the Kaluza-Klein modes will be charged under this dipole vector. And then, I mean, this dipole vector will be constructed by charges of the Kaluza-Klein modes, but not the four-dimensional gauge, which means we have modified dynamics in the Kaluza-Klein sector. You might be able to decouple. This is not really a rigorous thing. Let's say we're not sure that something that does not depend on the deformation will be a purely gauge theory quantity. What we are sure is that something depends on this deformation, it will not be a universal. Right. As I was saying, this helps us in decoupling the Kaluza clients. In this case, actually, there might also be other modifications, for example, in the quark interaction. So we have two kinds of things we can study. Like universal features, which does not depend on anything. So they will be the same in the super QCD and in its deformation. It also will be independent from the gamma parameter. So we may think of them as really universal properties of the gauge theory, depending on those things. However, there could be also new features which are not depending on the Kaluza-Klein modes, but on the deformation of quark interactions. So It's still work in progress, but from the point of view of the gravity dual, we can compute the gauge coupling and theta angle by the usual probes and find the unchanged in volume. Either the same thing from the quantic coupling of this superpotential that you can compute by a ratio of this proposal, well, my modification of the proposal by Kazan and some others to compute the superpotential, and they also unchanged. And the matching between gravity quantities and gauge theory quantities works in the same way. So we get this shows that the gravity dual really captures this gauge theory quantities independently of what we are doing to the calculation. Right, but there are also some new features. So this is the super BCD reported superpotential. If you look, for example, at structure attributed duality cascade, you see that cyber-duality is actually an exact case. It's not some flows in the infrared. It's actually exact. And it's encoded in this background, as an inspired found, by the exchange of this function H and G, and of course the usual exchange of NC and F minus NC, which also corresponds just to switching the two spheres. So, since we are doing transformation on clarified data, switching to two spheres splits the sign of gamma. But it would be nice to understand what it means for the TST deformity.
Where did NC and NF enter in the geometry? Could you remind me?
Yeah, so in the geometry, they were hidden into the functions. In the geometry, they were hidden into the functions, but you can clearly see them in F. So, one is basically the number of planes, and the other is the violation of the bank identity, it gives enough.
But they don't enter H and G?
They do. Oh. They do enter the functions. That's why you have to really mean if you switch one. It's actually symmetry of the BPS equation. So it's what am I doing?
So if you perform cyber geometry, does the infrared part of the infrared part of the geometry look the same?
Yeah, so as I was explaining, if that's the normal superQCD, the super QCD, the cyber duality in ordinary QCD, you have magnetic and electric field that flow to the same point in the infrared. Actually, as you can see, for example, in Thrusters review, the duality cascade, when you add the quantic superpotential to the theory, it actually becomes an exact symmetry. So it's at any point. It's not a flow. It's an exact. So, and this is because it's just a change of coordinates in the solution. It's changing between two. Right, so it would be nice to understand what is gamma and minus gamma. And next, we might want, for example, to study mesons. Okay, we know that gamma has to be rational, but still, the defined point sitting in the special points will exist. So we have these two branches. It would be nice to understand, from the point of view of the dual gauge theory, why you have these two branches of mesons, one represented by the defined point and the other by the center. Okay, then in summary, I hope I have convinced you that gauge theories with deformed products of in the Lagrangian constitute an interesting example of the gauge gravity correspondence, in particular because we can study them all together systematically by making use of this very nice and explicit TST transformation. One important thing is that new phenomena always seem to arise when gamma is quantized, rational in particular, and such as the presence of additional branches of monotonic vacua, and they can usually be studied by following the transformation of Veblen probes. And the deformation can also be used to study, as we saw in the last part, universal features of gauge theory duals. Thank you.
A question. So these defined planes that you're considering, what exactly are they doing? Along which directions are they extended?
The one that's in the superficial dual, right?
Yep.
So let me show you. Okay, can tell. So the color 5 plane is really like the Mandelson and 5 plane. So it's wrapped over this two sphere inside the gel. The other ones are actually wrapped along the asymmetry direction side and extended along the rod. That's how you get that the coupling is zero, actually, because they are infinite. That's why how you keep your why it's a flavor symmetry. So that's what they are doing. That's why the flavor lines are actually transverse, because they are to the powers of the transformation. Okay, we could do the transformation along psi, which would already break all the supersymmetries. But if we want to keep the n equals 1 supersymmetry, we do it along phi and phi tilde. These flavor lines are transverse, so they will expand and become the seven lines and then the source symmetry transformation.
Some of the deformations are non-local, so what would you say characterizes non-locality of the field theory in terms of gravity solution?
Well, so this is a bit subtle, because, for example, many of the non-local theories, for example, are the dipole theories, right? And in the case of the dipole theories, it can be actually shown that the planar dynamics doesn't, the planar diagrams are the same in respect to the undeformed theories. You would have to go then to, you know, corrections per gamma to actually see that.
But even in the planar, the observers are not the same. Asymptotic is no longer a DS.
No, it isn't. It's not, I mean, it's still a DS, it's not a DS times. Now you're talking about, I think he was talking in general, not about the superficism, right? So if you consider, for example, the minimal descent, the DS factor is always there. So what changes is the so of course the asymptotics are different.
I was asking about the formation of QX also around transcripts, actually not. I thought he was asking on the deformation that also acts on transcript detections.
Yeah, like so non-locality, okay, when does non-locality, he was asking about non-locality, right?
Yeah, right.
So non-locality happens when your torus is either completely longitudinal, in which case you get, for example, if you start from many equals lots of mean, you get the Mandacena Russo solutions and also other people found something from the non-commutative, for the non-commutative theory. And well, you can probably see the locality by actually going and doing a really DCFT and computing the problem.
What did you mean when you said planar perturbation theory is the same for after deformation? Because you are getting a different graph dissolution.
Yes, I'm saying it depends. So if you were, yeah, I'm getting a different graph dissolution, but at least okay. Let me be more specific for the dipole theory, which is. And then deformed n equals 4 frame is just saying the main examples. If you actually compute the correlators in the DS, they will give you the same answer. So the planar correlation functions will be the same. That's what, yes.
Okay, let me continue.
Right.
I have another naive question. So is there a simple way of seeing which solutions after being a TST will preserve supersymmetry in which form?
Yes, so this is explained. So if you're not in a very pathological situation, everything that, so if you have angles sort of commute with your supersymmetries, this is just, it can be more specific, but I should write it down, then it will be present. And not only that, but also not add additional singularities. It's all explained in the original minimal descent. So for example, if I were doing in this n equals one solution, in this n equals one solution, the R symmetry, so the supersymmetry you see is in Psi, which is the angle dual to the E1 R symmetry. So if I were doing a transformation on Psi, the result solution would be completely non supersymmetric. By doing Phi, I preserve Psi and I preserve the symmetry transformation. This is probably the easiest way to see. Also for the BJM theory, for example, I was only keeping one angle as out of the transformation, so also for, maybe it was for Psi. No, it was also for Psi. And that's SO, so the remaining U1 is actually SO2, which is the the asymmetry of an n equals 2 supersymmetric theory in 3 dimensions, which are SOM for n equals n.
So you're saying the killing vector along psi does not commute with the supersymmetry transformation?
Again?
So, what?
Yeah,
killing vector along psi does not commute with the supersymmetry transformation, so if you idealize around the fiber, it
will be right. Actually, there are these. So, for example, also in the. Well, I did it for this solution, for example, and for all of it for the minimal Lassena solution. You can do three parameter transformations, and they will be completely supersymmetric.
More questions? Good, let's start the game again.